Genesis chapter 32, please. We'll be looking at Jacob's wrestling match with God this hour. And we started this last time, so this introduction to Genesis chapter 32 is also a review of what we had last time. Remember, Genesis chapter 32 and 33 go together. These two chapters are a unit. And the whole theme of these two chapters is simply this. Jacob has left home. He left his original home 20 years ago because Esau was planning to kill him. So rather than let his brother kill him, he got out of Dodge and he left Canaan and went up to Paddan Aram, or Mesopotamia, if you want to call it that. And he went there, one, to escape Esau's vengeance over his stealing Esau's birthright, and two, to find a wife, a suitable wife. So those are the two reasons he left. Now we're 20 years later, and he's returning. And he's returning on the run, just like he left on the run, remember? He's returning because Laban, his father-in-law, and Laban's sons turned against him. So he ran. He made a pact. He made a deal, a non-aggression pact, we would call it, with Laban finally. And now he's coming back to the promised land. And he's worried that when he arrives there, Esau is going to kill him. Because 20 years ago, when he left, that was what Esau was going to do. He had it all planned out. He said, you know, when things quiet down a little after a while, I'm going to kill Jacob. And he as much as said so. So Jacob got out of Dodge. So chapter 32 and 33 are going to talk about the reconciliation of Jacob and Esau. So they're going to have a reconciliation, and that's what this section is about that we're coming up to now. Now, these two chapters break down into four major parts, and the first one is very short and very important, and that's the vision of the camp of God in 32 1 and 2. Remember in 32, 1, it says, "Now as Jacob went on his way, the angels of God met him. Jacob said when he saw them, 'This is God's camp.' So he named the place Mahanaim," which means two camps. It's a Hebrew word meaning two camps. The idea he meant was his camp and God's camp were there side by side. So he has a vision of the camp of God. He prepares a gift for Esau. That's in chapter 32, verse 3 through 21. And then in verse 22 through 32, Jacob wrestles God at Peniel. And finishing out the reconciliation with Esau, and that's all of chapter 33. So that's how those two chapters outline and work out. So, last time we were talking about the gift, remember, Jacob was preparing a gift for brother Esau to try and soften him up a little bit as he came back so Esau wouldn't kill him, basically. And just by way of review, Jacob planned several different plans in place for a reconciliation with his brother Esau. And the first one is mentioned in verse 3 through 6, and it was negotiation. He planned to negotiate. In 32:3, it says, "Then Jacob sent messengers before him to his brother." So the first plan he had was to negotiate a peace agreement. He had a plan of tactical organization. In verse 7 and 8. In verse 7, where it says, "Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people who were with him, and the flocks and the herds and the camels, into two companies." So he divided everybody into two companies. Why did he do that? In verse 8 it tells us, for he said, if Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the company which is left will escape. So who do you suppose he put in the first company? His best friends? His favorites? No, he'd put those he disliked in the first camp, and then if Esau came and attacked them, the rest of them could get out of Dodge. They'd have time while Esau was fighting the first camp. So tactical organization was another one of his preparations for a confrontation with brother Esau. Intercession, verse 9 through 12, a beautiful prayer that Jacob says to God to intercede in these events. Verse 9, Jacob said, O God, my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your relatives, and I will prosper you. So he's telling God, remember, God, you said if I went back to my country that you'd prosper me. So here's Esau coming at me. Now, if he were to wipe me out and kill me, that would make you look bad, God. So, you know, you have to do this in order to maintain your integrity, so to speak. So it was very, very good prayer, because he's standing on what God had promised him. He's standing on God's word. So intercession was another plan for reconciliation with Esau. And conciliation, or we might call it bribery, was his last resort in verse 13 through 21, when he assembled all of these animals that the servants were to take over to Esau and say, here's a gift. All of these over 550 animals, or part of the blessing, the results of the blessing that he had stolen from his brother Esau. And we'll get to that in a moment. So those were the plans he had for reconciliation. And the source of his tension is mentioned in verse 7. Why was he afraid? Why did he make all of these plans? Well, verse 7 says that Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people who were with him, as we said before, into two herds and flocks. So he was greatly distressed, and the source of his tension was, one, his own misconduct in the past. He said, you know, I stole Esau's blessing from Father Isaac. And that, he did it. I mean, so he's thinking back, Esau's going to be mad at me. And his own imagination then, in the present, says, what would I do, or what would a normal person do, if someone stole their blessing from their father? They're going to be mad. So that's the source of his tension. First, his past actions, or his guilt feelings, and then, second, his imagination. So he figured Esau was coming to fight him. I mean, that would be the natural logical conclusion, right? Esau comes with 400 guys. He's saying, oh boy, Esau's coming to fight. That was not the case at all. Esau was coming to bless him. So his own imagination kind of got him into a lot of distress and trouble here that was unnecessary. I don't know if that sounds familiar to any of you, but it does to me. I'm always get things built up in my mind, and they turn out to be nothing. So that's what Jacob was doing. So in verse 7 and 8, he prepares to save his own hide if things go badly, and Esau attacks. And we're going to see that he changes his mind, and after his talk with God, or his wrestling match with God, and he goes ahead and goes in front of everybody to meet brother Esau. Now, his prayer, as I mentioned before, was very good prayer. And we can learn from it, not because it's a prayer that we necessarily say in the church age. You know, we don't say in the church age, God spare me from my brother Esau. It was an Old Testament prayer. But the prayer had some principles that are universal, no matter which age we're in, whether we're in the Old Testament or the New Testament or the kingdom or eternity, it doesn't matter because the things in this prayer are all true. He pleads God's purpose. God has a purpose in every age. In verse 9, he says, O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your relatives, and I will prosper you. So he's praying based on God, what God said his purpose was for him. He said, God, you said it was your purpose for me to come back. So protect me so I can come back. Very valid prayer. In verse 10, he pleads God's grace, and that's ageless. That doesn't have a dispensation. God is a gracious God. In verse 10, he says, I am unworthy of all the loving kindness, or the grace is the word there, and all of the faithfulness which you've shown to your servant. For with my staff only I crossed the Jordan, and now I've become two companies. So he says, I don't deserve anything. I crossed this river, and all I had was my staff in my hand. Now I'm a rich, wealthy man. And God, you have blessed me because you're a gracious God. So he pleads on God's grace. And in verse 11, he pleads God's protection when he says, deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he will come and attack me and the mothers with the children, or the mothers over the children. Kind of colorful way of saying things, that the mothers would throw themselves over their children in a battle to save their children. So, very good prayer that he says to God there. Now, in verse 13 through 21, we have an unnecessary attempt at appeasement in 13 through 21. And first, he prepares that gift for Esau in verse 13 through 16. Verse 13 says, so he spent the night there. Then he selected from what he had with him a present for his brother Esau. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 12 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. He delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by itself. And he said to his servants, pass on before me and put a space between the droves. So that's his plan to appease Esau. So Jacob spent the night in the camp, and he sent his servants on ahead to meet Esau. Now the gift consisted of over 550 animals, as we just saw. 550, that was not including the calves of the camels, because it doesn't say how many there are, so there's 550 plus. That's a lot of animals. That's a big gift, a huge gift. And notice how he sets it up. And Jacob is a horse trader, a negotiator. He's just one of those guys who's always got a deal going, I think. I get that picture of him, Jacob. He's always thinking. And he's thinking, now how can I make this more dramatic even than it is? This huge herd of animals I'm going to send across. So he splits them up into droves and puts a space between them. So not only do they just come in one big herd, but first the herd of camels, then the herd of goats, and kind of like a procession, a parade. He makes, you know, just to be really dramatic about it, he separates them into droves. Oh, Jacob, always thinking. there's an element here of trying to appease his conscience, his own conscience, for the blessing that God had given him. Remember, he stole that blessing. He stole it from Esau, and he stole it from Isaac, actually. The blessing that Isaac intended to give was intended to be given to Esau, Jacob's brother. And Jacob got dressed up like Esau. He dressed in his clothes, and he put sheepskin on him so he would feel hairy like his brother. And he stole the blessing. He had his mom make up some stew, the kind that Isaac loved, and he just outright, flat, stole the blessing. There's no other way to put it. He stole it. So now he is trying to appease his conscience by sending some of the results of this blessing back to brother Esau. And in fact, in verse 11 of chapter 33, where it says, and this is Jacob talking to Esau now, and in verse 11 it says, "Please take my gift, which has been brought to you." And that word gift, I don't know if you have a marginal note in your Bible, but I do, and the word gift has a marginal note that says literally blessing. And that's exactly what the word is. It's the word baraka in Hebrew, and it means blessing. So what's he trying to do to his brother? He's trying to somehow return the blessing that he stole from Isaac. So he's got a guilty conscience going, and he's trying to make things right. Many, I'll throw this in because it occurred to me when I read this, is that you know how many organizations there are that use this guilty conscience to get money out of people? Not necessarily for stealing your brother's blessing, but just for being blessed, period. They make you feel guilty about that. They say, why should you be blessed and this person next to you, you know, there by the grace of God go I. So you better give us some money because you've been blessed and that person hasn't. Did you ever hear that before? People feel guilty for being blessed. And that's exactly what Jacob was feeling. He got blessed and he was feeling guilty for it. He's trying to get that guilty feeling to go away by giving money. Now, if you do that, if you come to Beth Haven Church and you say, God has prospered me and I feel guilty about that, so I'm going to give money, don't. Keep it in your pocket. That's not why we take an offering at Beth Haven out of guilt. We take an offering at Beth Haven because we would like you to show your appreciation for what God has done for you, not your guilt about it. And there's a world of difference between those two, because we can appreciate what God has done without feeling guilty. A lot of churches operate on guilt. They operate on guilt to get you to do things, to spend your money or give your money, to live your life. Everything is centered on guilt. Well, you know, that guilt is true moral guilt, but I have some good news for you folks. It's paid for. It was paid for at the cross. So don't give out of guilt. Give out of appreciation. Because we're all guilty. We're all guilty as anyone else. And God took care of that guilt. So be appreciative. Don't be guilty. Verse 20 gives the purpose of the gift. Why did he put together this huge gift to give to brother Esau? Well, verse 20 says, "And you shall say, behold, your servant Jacob also is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goes before me. Then afterward I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept me." So it's a conciliation. It's a bribe. Maybe if I give him all this stuff, he'll accept me then. There's a question that goes along with this, and it's a question that you can ask yourself, and that is, does human preparation and planning not trusting God? Was Jacob not trusting God when he put all this stuff together to give to Esau? And that's a hard question to answer. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Of course he wasn't. Well, you know, God works in different ways. He could have been working that way. It's impossible for us to know. But you know what? The text does not say that he was not trusting God. So I won't say he wasn't trusting God. You can make up your own mind. It kind of sounds like maybe he wasn't, but the text doesn't really say so. So I won't pass judgment, because if it's a sign of lack of faith, the text doesn't tell me it is. I'll just say, well, he was getting ready. Remember the old saying, if you pray for potatoes, what? Reach for a hoe, because we have our part to do too. And whether that's what he was doing or whether he was not trusting God, you can make up your own mind. Let's move on to the wrestling match. In verse 22 through 32, Jacob wrestling God at Peniel. Verse 22 says, now he arose that same night and took his two wives and his two maids and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. Then Jacob was left alone. So he left himself there alone. And a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh, so the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Is that Jacob or what? Let me go. Oh, not unless you bless me. Always had a deal going, didn't he? So he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. He said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with man and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him and said, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved. Now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Peniel, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh and the sinew of the hip. So Jacob wrestles God. Now, just by way of introduction, this is a critical event in the Old Testament. It's critical because it's a turning point in the life of Jacob, and it records the birth of the name Israel. This is where the name Israel came from. It's where the name Israel began. Nation Israel began when God said, your name isn't Jacob anymore, it's Israel now. So that started Israel. And when we talk about the 12 tribes of Israel, who do we talk about? The sons of Jacob, the sons of Israel. So this is where Israel started. So very important event in the Old Testament. Now, it records the name of the birth of Israel, and it breaks down into three parts with a prologue and an epilogue. The prologue is in verse 22 through 24a. And the prologue is written in typical Hebrew style. First, we'll have the summary and then the details. Verse 22 is the summary. where it says, "Now he arose that same night and took his two wives and his two maids and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok." So he crossed the river. That's the summary of the event. The Jabbok River is a river that runs into the Jordan from the west. We'll look at a map in just a moment. Its origin is in Amman, Jordan. Now, in verse 23 and 24, we have the details. 23 says, "He took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had." So it's given the details of verse 22. He sent everything across the stream. And this is the details, and the prologue ends up with Jacob all alone on one side of the river and everybody else on the other side. So he's all by himself. Here's the Jabbok River. Can you see it here? It's kind of dark. The Jabbok River, that's it right there. And it runs into the Jordan River. So this is where we are, somewhere up here. Not known exactly where that is, but it's somewhere up here. Now, north of Jabbok and east of Jordan, so it'd be up and east, around there somewhere. Not known exactly. Now, when the brothers split up, remember, and we'll see that Jacob is scheming again, but that's for next hour. When the brothers split up finally, Jacob will head down this way. Remember, he was heading for Bethel to begin with? Here's Bethel down here. He won't make it quite all the way, but he heads that way. And Esau, he heads clear down south. So we'll see how that split occurs in the next chapter, but I wanted you to see on the map how that's going to happen. So that's where this is taking place. They have a struggle in 24 and 25. Verse 24 says, "Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. And when he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him." And then the blessing in 26 through 29. Again, Jacob asked for a blessing. The man who was wrestling with him, whoever it may have been, gave him a blessing. And he says that your name won't be Jacob anymore. I'm going to change your name to Israel. So what does Israel mean? Well, Israel means fighter with God. Interesting name. Well, he spent the night fighting with God, basically, so it's a good name for him. But if you stop and think about it for just a minute, you can take that two ways, can't you? Fighter with God. That can be taken two different ways. I fought with God. So it can mean resistance, can't it? I fought with God all night long. But on the other hand, it can mean assistance. I fought with Bert, say. We fought side by side. I fought with him. You see how that can be taken two different ways? And both of those ways are absolutely true of Israel, that's for sure, at one time or another. They fought with God and they fought with God, if you know what I mean. So, excellent choice of a name for nation Israel, a fighter with God. So Jacob responds in verse 30 and 31. So Jacob named the place Peniel. He named the place Peniel. Peniel is the Hebrew word for face. And that makes it very clear that the man is God himself. Why? Because I have seen God face to face. So if he names the place Peniel, face, why? Because I saw God face to face. So who's the guy he fought? Well, there's only one other guy there. It had to be God. So it was God. He saw God face to face. And that's the interpretation of that event, is that Jacob met God face to face. So, as you can see, it's a very important event in the Old Testament. Jacob met God face to face. God blessed him and said, now your name is going to be Israel, because you have striven with God and man and prevailed. And then in verse 31 and 32, we have the epilogue. It says, now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Penuel, and Peniel and Penuel are used interchangeably, and he was limping on his thigh. And therefore, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh and the sinew of the hip. So this event records the birth of the nation Israel. Now there's a place that interprets it, and it's Hosea chapter 12. Look up at Hosea chapter 12. In Hosea chapter 12, verse 3 and 4. Verse 3 says, and he's talking about Jacob here, of course, in the womb he took his brother by the heel, and in his maturity he contended with God. Yes, he wrestled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. He found him at Bethel, and there he spoke with us. So this event records two events. It talks about finding God at Bethel. Remember, we read about that before, how he found where the stairway to heaven with the angels going back and forth. And Jacob said, this must be God's place. And that's when he found God. That's when he became a believer, we would say, at Bethel. And that's covered here in Hosea chapter 12. It says he found him at Bethel, and in his maturity, he contended with God. So we can caption Genesis 32, Jacob's maturity. And that's when he came to maturity in Genesis 32. And we have that interpretation given to us up in the book of Hosea. So now Jacob, Israel, has found maturity. Now, back to Genesis then, and we'll see there's two central ideas of Genesis 22 to 32 that we just read. The two central ideas are, one, the wrestling of God, or with God, occurred on the borderline of Canaan, the promised land. What does that mean? That associates the promised land with the presence of God in a very special way. You can't just say, well, God only lives in the promised land. God is omnipresent. He's everywhere. But in a very special way, he has a presence in the promised land. We found that out at Bethel, where the angels were going back and forth on the stairway to heaven. And now, again, we find it here at Peniel. So a very special relationship between God and the promised land. And the second central idea of this section is the name Israel. We have now nation Israel. And in the Old Testament, when there is a reference to Israel, you find several different ways that it refers to Israel. It'll either be described as Israel, the nation. It'll describe the people of Israel. And that emphasizes their national unity. People of Israel. So they have a unity as a nation. And yet, sometimes they're called the tribes of Israel. And when they're called the tribes of Israel, that emphasizes their diversity within the nation. Because not only are they a mighty nation, they are diversified within that nation. And the children of Israel. When you see that children of Israel, it emphasizes their origin as the sons of Jacob. Because Jacob was the father of nation Israel. Now in verse 33, next hour, we'll talk about the reconciliation between Jacob and Esau. Father, thank you for your word, and thank you for this history that you've given us and concerning your chosen nation, nation Israel. In Christ's name, amen.